sunny evening. Poor Lightning gotta go home and take him some rest. Get laid on a sunny evening. Poor Lightning gotta go home and take some rest. You know I got to pick cotton tomorrow and Monday. Little girl, you know that's gonna be a solid bet. Whoa, I don't weigh but 95 pounds. £100 is too much load for me to put.
He's talking about Daniel LaRusso.
I don't weigh but 90 pounds, boy. £100 is too much load for me to put. I can straighten up in the field and stoop down lightning. Go ahead on, boy, and get your sack full. They were talking about cotton.
The only problem with this version here on YouTube is they cut out all of the guitar solos.
Mm.
In God's name, would you do that?
I was going to say, that was a... I mean, I know you think all the music you play is awesome, but that was some great, great blues right there.
That's Lightning.
Yeah, but that's better than most Lightning.
He's the best of all time. Does everybody find this on...
What's the name of that clip?
Cotton Blues? I don't know.
Makes sense.
Something about cotton.
He's definitely singing about cotton and how he only weighs 90 pounds.
I think it's Cotton Picking Blues, I believe is what it's called.
That is entirely logical.
Find it on iTunes and get the version that is not badly edited to take out all of the best stuff. Although there was some good stuff in that song. Lightning, when he does his solos, is... the man. No cooler guy. Somebody asked me today, they were like, what's your goal? And I didn't really have an answer. I was like, well, I'm achieving it currently. But then when I hear that song, I think, my goal is to someday be as cool as Lightning.
Sucks to be you.
I got a long time. I got plenty of years to try.
And you got a lot of work to do.
Maybe someday I could be cooler than Mr. Miyagi. That one is possible.
Of the two, if you are as cool as Lightning Hopkins, you will pass Mr. Miyagi.
Because Mr. Miyagi is I'd say approximately as cool as my dad.
They are very similar.
They are remarkably similar. I think they may be the same guy. Not entirely sure.
Your dad's a little happier, more jovial. I mean, Miyagi's usually very serious.
My dad once said he thought he might be part Chinese. His exact words. Chinese. Not Japanese, Asian, Korean. No, Chinese. That's what he said.
What inspired this?
Well, he was looking at himself.
I see.
And apparently, apparently he would go into like teriyaki restaurants and they'd ask him if he was Asian.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Well, that would make you part Chinese.
I may be. I mean, they very well could have sailed here over the sea.
It's not like there are no Chinese people in the Seattle area.
No, I'm talking long ago.
Oh.
You know? Way back in the past. Anyway, we are obviously going to talk about The Karate Kid today, if you guys haven't figured it out yet. That is our Brian and Vinny movie review. We're going to talk about that after we talk about Raw and SmackDown. And V will give some thoughts on ROH. I actually did not have a chance to watch ROH this week. Although, apparently I'm going to have a lot of time.
I hate to say it. I can review that quickly.
All right.
I hate to say this in the week their TV got canceled. That news made me very sad. But this episode was completely missable.
Well, it happens here and there. How was the debut of Brutal Bob Evans guy?
Mike Bennett. Mike Bennett came out. You
Bob Evans is going to kill me for forgetting the name Mike Bennett.
You remember Brutal Bob?
Yeah. Well, I remember Brutal Bob, though.
You know, there were probably 10,000 Mike Bennett's walking around America. How many Brutal Bobs do you know?
I don't know. Well, actually, I could probably think of a few. But go on.
Mike Bennett came out, and every time we've seen him on the show, he's
been... My father-in-law is a Brutal Bob.
Is he... Okay, I've met the man. He's not brutal.
No, but he is a Bob.
I'm sure he's Bob. He's not boisterous.
It's cool Bob.
Sure. Cool Bob. That's your
cool hand Bob. Costco Bob.
Is that where he works?
He likes Costco.
Who doesn't?
No, you want to know where he works?
All right.
I didn't even realize this until I happened to see an email from Jerry McDivitt, K&L Gates. Yeah, Bob works for K&L Gates.
What is K&L Gates?
That's the law firm that Jerry McDivitt works for.
Vince McMahon's lawyer?
Yeah.
Really?
I did not know that until very recently. How's that for a small world?
Huh.
Yeah.
You should work him for some info.
Well, there are offices everywhere, so I don't know if they've ever even met, but I thought that was something else.
Well, it is.
It's something else.
It's pretty funny. But Mike Bennett came out. Every time we've seen him on ROH, he's been wearing a suit. So he comes out here and dressed to wrestle, and hell of a body on this man. Like, except for maybe Claudio, the best body in the company. So that's a plus. He wrestled Nick Dinsmore.
They have a better body than me.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think, duh.
Seriously, come on.
I'm trying to find my notes on here. I may be doing this from memory, everyone. This should be good. Why don't I have my notes? Oh, you know what? I watched that show on my old computer, or my regular computer, because I had not got my power cord for my laptop yet. Hmm. And apparently I forgot to email them. It was a short show. He had a match with Nick Dinsmore. It was...
You know your review is probably in the newsletter this week.
I could do that.
Since you wrote it for the newsletter.
Would you like me to look it up?
May as well. All right. If your memory is going to fail.
I was actually kind of intrigued by that challenge. See how much of the show I can remember. All right. Mike Bennett wrestled Nick Dinsmore. Here in 2011, they had a match out of 1911. Lots of headlocks and tackles. Nick Dinsmore has plainly given up on ever going back to WWE and is just going to eat whatever he wants now. The match was fine.
So what you're saying is he's fat?
He got fat. Hmm. Yeah. Now I've got the finish. This failed. I am loading up my notes as we speak.
You don't even remember anything about this match. Mike Bennett won, everybody.
Mike Bennett did, in fact, win. They were not stupid. They know what they're doing. He defeated Nick Dinsmore. Scroll down.
I'm just going to leave this dead air here for a little while.
We should. Let people know what it's like to
Vinny at his best, everyone.
A day in my life. He won with a spine buster. That's right. They did nothing but old school.
An important detail.
I couldn't remember how he won. Dinsmore made his comeback, and he missed a body press and managed to get his foot tangled in the ropes. And when he got his foot untangled, he turned around and Bennett spine bustered him and pinned him. And he looked good. It'd be hard not to look good with Nick Dinsmore, but it was nothing special.
I'm not the best radio show host in the world. That would be Art Bell.
But you're better than me.
But I am better than you. And so let me give you a tip to all of you out there who want to be radio show hosts someday. If it comes down to long stretches of dead air or finding out that a guy won a match with a spine buster, it's okay to not have the move.
All right. We had Jim Cornette interviewing the Kings of Wrestling. He announced the number one contender. They said they had beaten everyone in the locker room, and therefore they would not defend the titles again until they got a new team to face. And so for that reason, they announced the number one contenders are now the All Night Express. Not because the All Night Express beat anyone, mind you. There is just nobody else to face them. So they came out. They tried to cut a promo about how they were serious now. Rhett Titus said he was not wearing a bow tie. Hero tried to talk them out of it, saying they weren't ready. They said no, and then they faced off. And Chris Hero is a very good talker. The All Night Express were also there. That's all I'll say about that. We had a Cole and O'Reilly video. And then we had Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole versus Mike Posey and Corey Hollis. This remember last week we watched the World's Greatest Tag Team have the best squash match ever?
I do remember that.
This was the opposite of that. The jobbers got heat.
This was the worst squash match ever?
It was not the worst squash match ever, but the jobbers got the heat on Kyle O'Reilly. They're working him over. First of all, how can it be a squash match if you get heat on the guy? Second of all, he begins to make his comeback. He has like a half dozen kicks and then a big suplex, and he stands up. And then after hitting all these big moves, he suddenly collapses to try to build drama for the hot tag. It failed. They ended up hitting a series of backcrackers for the win. Kyle Durden interviewed Chris Daniels. He's wrestling Chris Hero next week, with the winner getting a TV title shot. And he basically said he would win and then beat Eddie Edwards with the TV belt, and that was L. And the main event was Colt Cabana versus Roderick Strong. They had a very, very by-the-numbers match. Picked up a bit at the end for some near falls, but then Roderick did a super kick and Colt kicked out, so Roderick immediately hit the sick kick for the win, and that was that. And yeah, if you missed this episode, frankly, you missed nothing.
Let's talk about a show you shouldn't have missed. SmackDown on the 7th of January.
It was better than ROH.
A fine program this was. It opened up with Kane and Edge in a Last Man Standing match, and they had a very good match, and it was like the safest Last Man Standing match I've ever seen. They did some moves, and then they did some easy crowd brawling, and then they got in the ring, and they were like hitting finishers, but instead of two counts, you'd get a 9 count to stretch this match out. And then finally, as Kane went up top, Edge threw a chair and hit him, knocked him into the ring, hit him with a bunch of chair shots to the leg, speared him, gave him another concerto to the leg, and Kane was unable to stand here in this Last Man Standing match, and thus Edge won. This was the blow-off to the match. Good match. I didn't think it was a great match, but per SmackDown standards, a fine effort.
Per Kane standards, a hell of an effort.
Yeah.
You have to look long and hard to find a Kane match better than this. My personal favorite spot as far as the, you know, it was the safest Last Man Standing match of all time. They were doing crowd brawling. They went up to like the second level, and Kane teased a chokeslam off the stairs. And when I say tease a chokeslam, I mean he grabbed Edge by the throat. He looked over the railing, and then Edge just broke it up. Neither man even left his feet. They just kept brawling. And at that point, Josh Matthews on commentary noted that if Kane had hit this chokeslam off the stairs, 10 feet down to the cement, there was no way Edge would be able to answer the 10 count.
Yeah.
Or, you know, ever walk again.
That's his job.
Yeah. So, yes, did some other stuff. The most dangerous spot was probably Kane taking a flat back bump onto the stairs. The you know, when they take the stairs in half, and there's the large, broad, flat surface that's pretty much at Kane's, about the level of his knees anyway. Like, if anyone in the company had to take this bump, it should be him. So, yes, there was never any danger, and lots of drama, people into it. And then Edge won. The feud goes out on a high note. Let's never have them wrestle again.
Dolph and Kofi for the IC title. Last week, they did this spot with a high cross that the people went apeshit for. And Dolph kicked out, and the people were all angry and upset and irate. So that was the finish of this match. And unfortunately, it came out of nowhere. And so it caught everybody completely off guard. They were very, very happy, and they went nuts. But I would not have booked this match like this. I would have given them some more time. I would have done some more near falls. I would have let Kofi get his big win clean. It seemed rushed. And then they did the angle afterwards where Vicky grabbed the mic and said Teddy wasn't there, so she was offering Dolph his championship rematch immediately. They did the old minute 30 deal where it goes no longer than that before Kofi hit his kick of doom and got the pin for a second time. So I enjoyed it. It could have been better. A lot of their matches actually have been better than this one, but it was time. It was time for Kofi to win the belt, and it also, in the end, set up Dolph for a world championship match, although in hindsight, when you look at it, he lost two matches on the same show before becoming a main event challenger.
Yeah.
Not sure I would have done that.
Well, it's the same
now company. Maybe not was the time.
The same company that has Miz as the champion who never wins, or at least never wins clean. More than the match,
actually, it's funny, because if you look in the Observer this week at the list of everybody's win-loss record for 2010, and of course, all of the babyfaces have the most, because on house shows, the babyfaces always win, unless the heel is much higher on the pecking order, or if it's a championship match and the heel is a champion. But despite all that, Miz was like number 4 in most wins in WWE in 2010.
Oh.
Then they gave him the title, and that all turned around. That's what they do nowadays.
I was just blown away between last week and this week how Kofi Kingston's the exact same wrestler he's been for like years. But now, all of a sudden, people love him. And I was trying to figure out why. They love him more now than they used to. And I think part of the reason they get into these matches so much is because they really, really want him to win. But at the same time, I think they know they're not convinced it's going to happen. Like, if you go to a house show, You bet on John Cena to win, you'll probably make some money. And everyone knows that. At this point, people are not yet convinced Kofi's going to win. So when he does win, they are happy and they're also surprised. So that's my theory as to why he's so beloved right now.
My theory why he's so beloved is because he's a great babyface.
That helps.
There's never any question. He never does anything like an asshole. He never acts like a jerk. He's just a really nice fella.
Who hits
that fights hard.
Who and hits a few cool moves once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it's done. Watch The Karate Kid, for Christ's sake. Then we had Dolph breaking up with Vicky, which caused her to freak out, which led to another deal later.
Vicky deals with stress the exact same way I do.
Yeah.
Screaming at the top of your lungs when no one's around.
Drew and Kelly did a segment, which is always great. She thinks he's full of shit. And think about that. When Kelly sees through you, wow.
All I know is I watched Kelly walk down this hallway about four times.
I did too, actually. And I did it with my wife in the room, believe it or not.
It was one of her better days.
It was mostly just because of I wasn't even watching her boobs. I know that sounds like I must be gay, but...
Well, you need to go back and watch again, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I saw them the first time, but I was more just watching, like... You got to watch her walk down the hall, and you have to just, for your own comedy purposes, think, this is how she walks everywhere.
Yeah.
She walks with a completely vacant look, mm-hmm. and she stares to the right.
Yeah.
And then she stares to the left.
She doesn't want
to,
the
and
camera.
And then she looks up.
The camera is dead center, but she does not want to look at the camera, so she just lets her eyes wander. And it's like everything on Earth is new to her all the time.
It's like she's in the bat exhibit or something at the zoo. It's the way she walks all the time. I found that to be hilarious. But anyway, he wants her to trust him. Big Show, Cody, and Drew, three-way for the title. Of course, Vicky added Dolph. I could not take Cody seriously for even a minute in this match. Drew, I only took seriously because they push him a lot. Big Show, obviously there was a chance. And then, of course, Dolph pinned Cody. Cody was the designated jobber, and... Dolph goes on to face Edge at the Royal Rumble, and Big Show kicked out of every move on the earth and still was not beaten. So, suffice to say, they're protecting him for Wade Barrett.
Sure, and why not? He's a damn giant. And he was in there against three men, three heels. It was, you know, largely a three-on-one handicap match here. And he was finally overwhelmed, and he still managed to fight dump Drew out of the ring, but he was down on one knee. And Dolph said to Cody, let's get him. And Cody said, okay, and turned his back. And Dolph zigzagged him and pinned him. So Cody's a geek. Dolph is a weasel. And Big Show is the giant who did not lose, but did not get his title shot that he probably deserved. So, great.
Michelle and Kelly.
Not great.
Sucked. My God, Kelly was awful in this match.
I like when they try to do the spinning head scissors spot. And it was clearly Michelle carrying Kelly around on her shoulders in circles.
Kelly's boobs could be three times as big, and I still would never need to see this match ever again.
It was no good.
And then when it was over, Michelle just shook her head. I've had that feeling many times.
She knew this was not her best.
Many times. So usually across from you.
Yeah, that's fair.
So anyway,
although we never tried that spot.
No, this blew.
Then
I was talking about on the show, but
yeah,
in the ring as well.
Yeah. Then Lay Cool went to beat up Kelly Moore. Drew, of course, made the save. The announcers turned this a great sign of chivalry. Low standards for gentlemanly behavior in pro wrestling.
Then Alberto came out and talked about the match with Ray. They had a best of three falls lucha match. I was disappointed not to see a Rudo beatdown, but what can you do? Ray tapped out early in the first fall. And then the second fall, he made his big comeback. And then, of course, it was tied going into the third. And they had a hell of a third fall. Actually, had a hell of a finish for the second fall, too, with the Del Rio going for the arm bar. And Ray hitchhiked out, did a cradle, and then a La Magistral for the pin. Then the third fall, they did a bunch of stuff. And then, unfortunately, they ended up outside. 619 around the post, big dive. And then as Ray was climbing back in, Ricardo grabbed his boot so Ray could not get in, and Alberto won the match and apparently the feud, which is a hell of a way to blow off a feud. The babyface gets counted out in the penultimate match. I don't know about that one.
That was a little weird. But it was a fun match. It capped off a hell of a show, and the best part is, when the night was over and you look back, the biggest stars of the show were Kofi Kingston, Dolph Ziggler, Wade Barrett, who we completely did not say, but he interfered in the four-way attacked Big Show and left him laying, and Alberto Del Rio. They are trying to push new guys here. They did their best on this show to get new guys over, so a giant thumbs up for that.
All right, your Raw thoughts.
What happened on the show? The Punk thing on the top of the Tron was fucking dumb. That's what I remember about this show. They did the whole show-long angle with Punk wanting the guys in Nexus to prove themselves, basically by going through intense pain. So first he ordered McGillicuddy to take a gang beating, then he was never seen again. We had Alberto defeated Truth via countout when Ricardo got on the mic and said, "Hey, what's up? What's up, Kipasa?" I laughed. Then he said Americans knew nothing about music. He said only Mexicans knew about music, like mariachi music. He had Ricardo sing, and this made Alberto happy. And there is nothing in wrestling I like more than a happy Alberto Del Rio.
He's a happy man.
It's always great when he's smiling. Okay, we had a segment with Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole, which Cole read an email from the GM that said Michael Cole was conceited, pompous, arrogant. And then he said, "Just kidding, ha, ha, ha." Then he said the email said he was the epitome of manhood. He said that he was witty and intelligent, at which point a fan yelled, "And a dork!"
That was actually great.
So Lawler had enough, stood up, slammed the laptop shut. Cole opened it and said, "It still works." And the whole point of this whole long segment was just the
Please
GM...
Please tell me, what was the entire point of this fucking segment?
It was so the GM could book Miz and Riley versus Orton and Lawler. And the only reason I talked about it in such detail is, for those of you who have been listening for a long time, I don't think he was on the Christmas show, but our friend Brian's friend Sean. Our friend Sean. Michael Cole in this segment is how Sean acts every day of his life. Look the same, same body language, same glasses, same posture, same speech tone, same way that he laughs. He actually says, "Ha, ha, ha." That's what Sean is like, everybody.
Yeah. That he does remind me remarkably of Sean.
And that made me laugh. So we had Husky's initiation. He was last with a belt. All I could think was, thank God this was his initiation and not David Ortunga's, because that would have been awkward. And so they whipped the hell out of the man. And then Jerry Lawler just said, "This is the stupidest thing I have ever seen." And it ended.
Mm-hmm.
We had a pointless tag match. We had a
speaking good review.
A pointless clip of NXT. Somebody named Jacob Novak was cut. He has a poor speaking voice. Dolph Ziggler buried him. Show came out. You know how guys have, like...
I wonder if that means that guy's going to be cut. Because I don't think we see... Maybe we do, but I don't recall seeing, like, NXT clips every single week on the show. And this was, like, designed strictly to show you, this guy sucks and he got cut.
I've never heard of him or seen him before. In 3 seconds, I decided he sucked. Or at least he needs to... The tone of his voice is an immediate channel changer. He needs work. So, a lot of wrestlers have t-shirts to sell or wacky hats or whatever. Big Show's new gear is a black Letterman's jacket with the logo on the back. Hey, you can sell it, whatever. He promised to knock out Wade Barrett and win the Royal Rumble. Nexus interrupted and he prepared himself to fight them all, but it turns out it was just Otunga's initiation. He was sent in the ring to die, and so Big Show killed him. We had the 400th Sheamus-Morrison match, and this may have been longer than all the other matches put together.
No.
He wrestled for a long damn time. It wasn't bad, it was just long. Morrison finally won with the running knee to the face, so there you go. They both just keep swimming at the top of the bottom of the pile. Punk told Gabriel and Slater to hit each other with kendo sticks. They stalled forever, then turned to hit him, and he said, "Go ahead." Then they bailed. I guess they're out of Nexus now?
They're on SmackDown now.
Oh, well, there you go.
There's a new Nexus on SmackDown with Wade Barrett and Ezekiel Jackson.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So they're both new Nexuses?
I think that the...
Nexi?
I could be wrong. Well, actually, I don't know. I know that they're considering a Nexus versus Nexus match at WrestleMania. I don't know if that means that one crew will turn babyface or if they are just going to do a heel versus heel match. That'll get over. But that's at least in the talking stages.
All right. So they announced Shawn Michaels in the Hall of Fame, which
means... Oh, by the way, today, Vince officially... Well, I shouldn't say officially, but apparently around today he realized, you know, Brock's probably not going to be able to do WrestleMania.
Hmm.
Always the last to know that, Vince.
Clearly not a reader.
Clearly not a listener to the Brian and Vinny Show.
No.
Or Wrestling Observer Radio.
Yeah. So yeah, Shawn Michaels is going into the Hall of Fame, which means in 2010, in all likelihood, it's not the second half of this is not an official announcement, but my all-time favorite pro wrestler and my all-time favorite pro football player are probably both going to the Hall of Fame. So I may have to plan some trips here. I could be busy. So they had an awesome video package for it, and then Shawn Michaels came out. He was there.
So you may go to Mania?
I may have to now.
I think you should, because there's going to be a special guest there that would like to see you.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me want to not go.
No, you want to go.
There are many people out there who I believe want to kill me.
He doesn't want to kill you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. We'll have a good time.
Hmm. Let's see what I can do. So if Shawn was there, when he's away for these, when he's not on TV every week and then he comes back, you kind of forget how silly pro wrestling can be sometimes. This 40-something man comes out to a song calling him a sexy boy.
He's about 44, I think, about right now.
And as this...
He's mentioned this for years, by the way, how stupid this is. He's well aware.
I know. I'm sure he's in on it. I'm sure he's not oblivious. And as he's dancing and prancing to the sexy boy song, it goes to the crowd where there are fat men in their late 30s who are dancing and clapping along with them.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling is awesome sometimes. So he got in the ring before he could say anything.
I can't wait till he's like 65 still doing this dance down to the ring.
He will be. Yeah. Oh, he will be. So, yeah. Alberto interrupted him before he could even talk. Said he was the future. Shawn was his history. He vowed to win the Royal Rumble and then win the heavyweight title or the WWE title. Then he would be the new Mr. WrestleMania. And so Shawn super kicked him in the face. He took this awesome bump with his feet flying high up in the air. And if you try this 1,000 times, I don't think he could have done it any better. The scarf managed to fall right across his face. And he laid there like a dead man. And Shawn danced around a bit. And then he stole the scarf. And then he left.
The only thing he could have done better is if he would have dramatically... So you can see the scarf going up and down with his breathing.
I see.
Yeah.
I thought you meant dramatically breathe into a microphone.
Oh, he could have done that too.
I see. Point is, this segment was a goddamn home run. This was great. We had a segment with Miz and Riley backstage. Miz was pissed that people are talking about Orton and not him, and they all assumed Orton would beat him at the Rumble. Here was Cole was in the ring to talk about John Cena when CM Punk interrupted. He was on top of the Titantron. He teased that his initiation would be to jump off the Tron and die. He asked if he should jump, and everyone said yes. Then he revealed that he had a safety harness on. There were two guys spotting him. He said he was safer than anyone in their seats. And they played the Nexus theme song. Everyone went to the ring. Punk had to take off his harness, disconnect himself. Had to walk down from the Tron, walk down to the ramp. It took forever. He got in there, started repeating everything he'd already said. And then his music played, and that was that. And, I'm sorry. Cena interrupted. Cena appeared on the screen and interrupted. Did some lame comedy. Stole some of the same shtick that Colt Cabana was doing on ROH within just an hour or two at the same time. And challenged Punk for next week. Punk accepted. And then Cena became serious and angry and scary. And when he gets serious and angry, he also gets very scary. Why is he not like that all the time?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if I was really that scared.
Well, it was better than the rest of the segment.
It was better than the shitty comedy. That's for sure.
It was better than the shitty comedy. And, yes, I don't know what the business was with the Tron and the harness. They tried something new, and not every new thing you try works out. And then Miz and Riley faced Lawler and Orton in the main event. And as you would expect, a good old school tag. Orton got to make the comeback. And even Orton is... some guys are really awesome at being the babyface in peril and taking the beating in the ring and making you care. And some guys are awesome standing in the corner, desperate to get into the ring and kick some ass. And Orton is now one of the guys who is desperate standing in the corner to kick some ass, and he's awesome at it.
That's because he's a shitty babyface in peril.
Well, there's that too. So that is the correct role for him. He should be on the apron while Lawler takes the beating. Then he can make his comeback, and his comebacks are great. So there was a point even before he got in, he came in to hit an RKO on Miz, and Lawler made the cover, but Riley broke the pin. So he finally got the hot tag. He ran wild on Riley. He dared Miz to get in the ring, but Miz pushed out. Riley tried to get him from behind, but Orton just RKO'd him. Miz still did nothing. So Orton tagged in Lawler, and they were in Tennessee, so he got a giant ovation. And he pulled the strap down and hit the fist drop for the win. And Cole said, "Talk about vintage." And indeed, I don't mind him saying vintage Jerry Lawler, because it is vintage when he does it. So it was Raw. It was all right. I didn't hate or like it very much at all.
What? I thought it was a very good show. That's her third great show in a row. Maybe great's going a little too far.
It was fine.
Third very good show in a row right there. So, on a roll going into Royal Rumble. Never listen to Vinny's opinions. Just listen to his reviews of the show. Otherwise, you'll be led astray. Let me play a song here, then we'll talk about The Karate Kid, which you better fucking liked. Here we go.
All right.
That guy's kind of a geek, but whoa. I gotta admit, that was a lot of hard work went into that one, and it was a pretty good one.
Who's the guy?
Nabil.
Oh.
He's a geek.
Did he make the song?
Yeah. Oh, well, of course. That. Who else is going to write a song about Nabil?
I don't know.
Nobody. Nobody in their right mind. All right, one more, and then we'll get into The Karate Kid 2.
This was the show for you.
I'm bringing satchel ass. The mother boys don't know how to act.
Pay attention.
I think it's special what's behind your back. So turn around and I'll buck your ass and you humble. Have a good day.
What the hell was that?
Oh, was that Iron Sheik in the Dungeon of Doom?
May have been.
Satchel.
Fuck me now over and over again. I mean, real fucking bitch.
What? I can't read this fucking glass. I'm so fucking bad.
Oh, hang on. This just got awkward.
To the back!
Go ahead. Go ahead. Caller, go ahead. Who's this? Go ahead. Go ahead. Fat fuck. Go ahead. Fat fuck. Caller, go ahead. Who's this? Go ahead. Fat fuck. Caller, go ahead. 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 Enjoyed.
From Paul, it says.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Paul in England, actually, made that fine song. All right, well, I suppose we should talk about The Karate Kid Part 2.
Part 2.
We reviewed The Karate Kid
a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and finally, The Karate Kid Part 2 aired in HD, and so, of course, I recorded it for this program here. It's been on my DVR for months. And because of the snow last night, we could start a little earlier tonight, and so we watched it. And I remember when I was a youngster, I loved this movie. I didn't love it as much as the first one. The first one, for those of you that are younger and don't remember VHS tape, for example, I had this on a VHS tape and watched it so many times, I think the tape fell apart. And then The Karate Kid Part 2, I loved in a different way. I didn't watch, like, the original Karate Kid, I watched the entire movie about a million times. When we watched that a couple of years ago, not only did it stand the test of time, not only did it hold up, but I remembered, like, every moment of that movie. And every scene that ended, I knew exactly what was coming next. I just have the movie memorized in my head from years and years ago. I was not that way with this movie. With this movie, there were a few things I remembered. The girl, for example. It was the beginning of my problems with Asians, I believe, way back in the day. I remembered the fight scene at the end, move for fucking move. Not only did I know move for move, but I recall when I was like 12, me and my friends had one of those video cameras that was like...
One of those, you say.
Well, it was like the size of a mini fridge.
Right, right, yeah.
Just gigantic thing that you put up on your shoulder. And we choreographed that entire fight and recreated it on video. I distinctly remember doing this. One of my earliest combat scenes, so to speak. Long gone, unfortunately. But I don't remember a lot of the movie. Like, I remembered the main heel, Sato, and whenever he spit out one of his lines, I remembered it perfectly. But it wasn't like I knew going in what the line was going to be. But once he said it, I was like, oh, I remember that awesome line. And I kept trying to think throughout the movie. I remember that Daniel and the Japanese fella, I don't even remember Sato's nephew's name.
I only referred to him in the review as the nephew.
The nephew.
I don't think his name was ever mentioned.
The nephew. I remember that, Daniel-san and the nephew had a fight in like this castle, and there was a bridge. I distinctly remembered this. But I was kept trying to figure out what happens with Mr. Miyagi and Sato.
See, I,
for the life of me, I can't remember how it goes from those two to the other two guys.
See, I remember when I was a kid, I actually liked part two more than part one. I may have been the only person who thought so. And having seen Karate Kid again, I don't think I still feel that way. I think Karate Kid is a really good movie. But because I liked part two more, I remembered it more vividly. I remember I didn't remember it scene for scene, but I remember the basic plot line. There was two old guys that had a feud, and their young boys who were also having a feud. And I remember that by the end, the old guys were friends, but the young boys were not.
See, I forgot that part. I kept thinking, does Sato die?
I remember the storm and how... I didn't remember the specifics, but I remember in the storm that their honor was... the feud was called off.
Yeah. They made amends.
Yeah.
I did remember as soon as the house that Sato lived in collapsed. And by the way, he's so rich and he lives in a thatch hut. I'm not sure about that. But I remember when the hut collapsed, that's when I remembered, oh yeah, he breaks the board with his hand.
I'd forgotten that part.
I remember that as soon as that happened.
And they built to that too, because there's a scene where Miyagi goes to Sato to try to make peace, and they trained together 45 years ago, I think they said, when they were in their youth. Miyagi's father trained them both, and they had, can't even call it a board, they had a 4x4 that they were trained to chop through, and they never ever could. And here, Sato is trapped under a 4x4 in this shattered hut, and there's a monsoon going on, and there's wind and lightning and thunder, and Miyagi comes up to save him, and Sato screams out, "So you come to fight me now?"
Yes, you coward.
You coward. "Now you come to fight," he said. "This is the only way you can win." And so Miyagi broke the board in two with a karate chop and led him into the safety of the shelter, the only concrete building in the village.
I got to say that The Karate Kid and The Karate Kid Part 2 in 2011 are still awesome fucking movies with great storylines. Like, I just watched this and I thought, you know, Vince Russo has stated publicly that he doesn't read books. And I always thought that was so goddamn stupid. How can you be a story writer and not read fucking stories? That's like completely idiotic. But then when I was watching this movie, I thought, you know, if you don't read books, fine. But at least watch like good movies, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
This was a great movie with a great story, great twists and turns. There were some great fucking heels. There were some great baby faces. There was everything that you would want in a movie. Everything tied together at the end. There was almost nothing that did not make sense, although there were a couple of nonsensical moments, like this moment of love.
We'll get to that.
Between Daniel and his girl, and all of a sudden a monsoon comes out of nowhere. Not sure if they really come on that fast, out of nowhere. But regardless, it was a great story, and it really showed even a complete idiot how to book heels and how to book baby faces.
Yes. The heels in this, until the face turn at the end, the heels are never not heels. They are assholes in every scene. And the good guys are good guys in every scene.
Yeah, but even the turn, even the baby face turn of Sato at the end, it made sense.
Yeah.
They had a reason for it, and when it occurred, you completely understood why this man turned babyface.
Yes.
It made sense.
Because this man I've hated for the past 50 years and I've wanted to kill, he just saved my life.
Selflessly.
So yes, he put himself at risk to save my life.
For no good reason.
I suppose I can put aside our differences now. Well, that makes sense.
The only reason that Mr. Miyagi went to save him in the middle of this monsoon was because he was a nice man. Mm-hmm. He was a babyface.
It was the right thing to do.
It was the right thing to do.
In fact, the more I think about this, the more sense it makes, because Sato's nephew, about 47 times in this movie, refers to Miyagi and or Daniel as a coward.
Yes.
Uses that worm, spits it out. You coward. Your teacher's a coward like you. And then at the end, in the storm, when his uncle is saved, then there's the girl who's in the tower ringing the bell, letting everyone know to come to the shelter. Then she is trapped up there in the storm and may die. So Sato orders his nephew to go save her. But he can't. Because, you see, he is the coward.
He is the coward. And the two baby faces who had been called cowards throughout the entire movie, they were heroes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The whole way it goes through, if you watch the feud, the bad guys get the heat, and they establish themselves as dicks, and they own all the land the village is on, and they are charging exorbitantly high rent prices, and then Daniel finds out they're scamming the villagers for extra money. Yeah. So there are hope spots throughout. They never really get a leg up on the heels, but a few times they make them look silly.
Sure.
They expose their scam. Daniel wins a bar bet. There are hope spots throughout. And then Daniel will be cornered by three giant men who will kick his ass.
Sure.
And leave him laying.
Yeah.
Because you want to build up heat to the end. And the comeback, it is the finish. It is Daniel versus the nephew one-on-one. And I do not remember the fight move for move. But I remembered Daniel's comeback vividly. Mainly because it's just twist to the right and punch, twist to the left and punch, repeat. But as much as we laugh at Ralph Macchio in this scene...
I don't laugh at Ralph Macchio.
There were some scenes in here where we did.
I wasn't laughing at him. I was laughing at the dumb shit that they made him do.
We were laughing at
Big
Daniel.
Difference.
Okay, fair enough. But the babyface fire he has in the comeback, chills went down my spine. This is a hero.
I remember saying in our original Karate Kid review that I have no idea how Ralph Macchio fell into largely obscurity. He didn't have much of a career after these movies.
He vanished.
I have no idea why. He was a fucking great actor. I thought he was so awesome in The Karate Kid, and then I watched him in this movie. He's great. He is a superstar. And then he went on to nothing.
Guest spots on Psych and stuff.
I'm sure, yeah, people will point out that, he was
He's still alive. He is still getting work.
Warehouse 13 in July 2006 or something. I don't give a fuck. I'm talking, this guy should have been like...
He was in Beer League.
A big megastar. And I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. Maybe we'll have to try and get him on the show. For all I know, he may be available.
Yes.
Yeah, but he was outstanding in both of these movies. And if you haven't seen it, I strongly recommend it. Watch the first one first.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't watch the first one, there is a brief recap at the beginning of the second movie of these the events that transpired in the first. But it's best to watch the first one first. Sato is... He was such a great heel. Everything about him. His promos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he does cut promos. He does not have lines. He has... promos.
He cuts promos. He's always wearing a suit and sunglasses.
Always looking stern.
Always looking
stern. He never
stern.
Smiles until the end when he's a nice guy.
Dressed to the nines. Yep. That's right.
And his... Oh, go ahead.
You can talk about his nephew.
I thought his nephew was even better. His nephew is very tall, at least taller than everyone else in Okinawa. He's always, in every scene, he's wearing a different silk shirt that is unbuttoned to show off his pecs and his gold chain.
Yes.
And he's wearing... slacks that come up like past his navel, just pulled all the way up there, and he just walks around like this complete douchebag. You can't help but hate him, but then he kicks everyone's ass.
Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just the best villains ever.
If you could get heels like this in wrestling today, we would not be having the problems that we're having
Our
right
now. ROH would still be on TV if this guy was around.
Instead, we've got like, I don't want to make fun of anybody in WWE that's a heel right now, but... Who is a heel?
This guy's a better villain than Miz.
I was going to name Randy Orton, and I forgot he's a babyface. Let's watch this movie and compare Daniel San to Randy Orton.
Let's not.
There's a problem with wrestling nowadays, everybody. Let's compare Wade Barrett to Sato. Now you know why this business sucks.
Yes.
Now you know why this shit was so great in the 80s. People hadn't forgot what it meant to be a good guy and a bad guy. God damn, this movie was great.
You know the other reason this movie was great? The Peter Cetera song. That song is awesome.
Oh,
great, great, great 80s power ballad. That's awesome, too.
This movie made an indelible mark on my life, the more I think about it.
There was a negative.
Well, sure.
And it was a strong, strong negative.
It was
negative.
Still an indelible mark.
Well, I just meant in the movie.
Oh.
But
almost an indelible physical mark.
It may have. Daniel and Kumiko had the worst on-screen chemistry I've ever seen in a couple.
Oh, it was not that bad. I've seen far worse.
Maybe it's just that they made him... Maybe there's more of the stupid stuff they made him do.
They made him do a lot of stupid shit.
They go on a date where they went to a sock hop.
Yeah.
And I'm really not exaggerating there.
No, it was a sock hop, and he could move.
He was moving. They were doing 50s dancing, and then they separated, and Daniel-san started bobbing back and forth and knocking his knees together. And then began to play air guitar.
Mm-hmm.
This did not make the hero look cool.
This is the 80s. Of course it made him look cool. What was the movie? 1987?
86, I believe.
86? Let me find out.
Then after the dance, they were both blown up. So he took her to a table in the back where they attempted to flirt, and then they held hands.
1986, so I was 11. If I was watching the video cassette, I was probably about 13, I'll bet. Yep.
It all makes sense now.
It all makes sense now. My whole life stemmed from these two fucking movies. Yeah.
She was cute.
Yeah.
She certainly was.
So anyway, this was a great movie. I recommend everybody go out right now and get it, preferably on Blu-ray if you can find it. I don't even know if it's out on Blu-ray.
It should be.
It was playing on Starz Family.
It's Mr. Miyagi. Family movie.
Mr. Miyagi was a pretty cool guy, too.
Yeah.
Although it was every martial arts stereotype you've ever seen.
Well, that's what made it great, though.
He was a short, old Asian fellow who spoke in parables,
mm-hmm.
very rarely full sentences.
And always tried to avoid combat, but when he did, he kicked ass. There's a scene where Sato comes to the village and demands Miyagi fight him, but Miyagi is not there. So Sato orders his men to basically destroy everything. And they attack Daniel with a spear, and they're trashing gardens and houses and pottery, and Miyagi arrives to kick their ass, and I am 90% sure it's actually Pat Morita out there, because
yeah,
he was moving pretty well for an old guy, but it did not look like he was actually beating these men up in any way.
I don't know. I have been involved in various combat disciplines for my whole life, ever since this fucking movie came out, coincidentally. And, I mean, obviously, you know, Pat Morita wasn't a, you know, 10th
he was not
degree
really
black belt.
A ninja.
But I will say, he was not an embarrassment. And quite frankly, he was an old man here.
He was an old man.
He couldn't kick very high. He's fucking old.
That's my point.
Yeah. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt here.
For an old man, he moved well. He was flexible. His form was fine. He just was slow.
And this movie is everybody who's an MMA fan should watch it just to get an idea of what people envisioned martial arts as being in the 80s.
Yeah.
Dudes did karate. I mentioned this a couple of days ago. I go down to the karate school at the bottom of the hill, and we do forms, and we do rising blocks and stuff like that. But when it's time to spar, we put the gloves on and the mouthpiece and the headgear, and we spar like sparring dudes. You know? Not in this movie. In this movie, if a man came at you with a knife to the head, you did a rising block.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got in a front stance and punched him in the chest. That's what they thought martial arts was back then. And, of course, you had the karate black belt who had 9 men attack him and he beats them all up single-handedly.
Yeah.
But, of course, it's a movie, so it's really 9 guys standing around him.
It's and 9 guys in a line and he beats them one at a time.
Yeah, one guy runs in and then he falls down, so then the next dude runs. It's not like all the guys want to attack him at the same time, like a real encounter. It's one guy at a time. It's completely wacky.
There was a point also in the final scene. The only scene where the nephew is not wearing a silk shirt and slacks, he is wearing black, I guess, karate gi pants and a yellow top. It is clearly meant as a tribute to Bruce Lee's yellow suit. And in fact, at one point in the battle, he attempts the Bruce Lee jumping double foot stomp.
He failed.
Fortunately, he missed, and Daniel survived.
I did like that in this movie, Daniel tried the crane kick again, and his finisher didn't work.
What? Even in this is 86, then Karate Kid must have been like 84. And in that movie, and in the first scene of this movie, they say, if the crane kick is done correctly, no can defend. It's a jumping front kick.
Well, he didn't do it correctly.
Probably, I guess not.
That's the point.
He clearly did not do it correctly, no. Because this man defended him and threw him aside like he was nothing.
There was a great spot at the end, straight out of pro wrestling, and I remember this spot vividly where Daniel, like, lands blow after blow after blow, and then he rears back for one big-ass blow, and as he's rearing back, the heel has, like, the double sledge, and he comes up and hits him right in the jaw. It's, like, the perfect cutoff. Like, perfect cutoff in pro wrestling. And I just cried watching how great this scene was. So, anyway, this is the new best movie I ever saw. Everybody go out and buy it. Watch it. And maybe on one of these days when we do open lines, call in and tell me how great The Karate Kid Part 2 is.
Fine idea.
Because it is quite great. There you go, everybody. We've got a bunch of shout-outs to do today. Let's,
I thought we were done.
No. Let's play a song, and, Paul in England, another one. Let's play this one, and then we'll do shout-outs.
There was no tree involved. There was no barbed wire mat involved. There was no tacks or glass involved. He gave him a suplex and pinned him.
He pinned him with a wrestling hold.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my
Vincent
up and take her to the
Vince Russo
show. There's always lots of
beautiful people
with figures they don't try to hide.
It was just designed to show off her asshole. Not just the ass, but her actual tongue.
Whatever I can compare to the ass sitting by my side. Saturday night at the movies, who cares what
impact
you see when you're hugging with your baby?
There were four dudes in the center of the ring with a Christmas tree composed entirely of barbed wire.
Barella got whipped towards the tree and he just stopped running.
There was so much stupidity here, I couldn't write it all
down.
He
just stopped running.
He put on the brakes, he said.
Yeah, he's like, shit, a barbed wire tree. I'll just stop running.
I'm not
no one's
sure.
Ever thought of that in history of wrestling before. I can't believe there's a tree made of barbed wire.
Impact.
You see,
he clutched the tree close to his chest and nuzzled it to ensure that it stuck him.
This yeah. is the lowest point in Impact history.
That was also Paul in England. He's a new hero on this show. There were no barbed wire Christmas trees
maybe
in Karate Kid.
Maybe someday we should go back and watch that episode again.
I don't know if I can bring myself to do that, Vince.
It was really bad.
All right, the shout-outs here. This is from William. Oh, he got banned.
All right.
Too bad for him.
No shout-out for you, then.
It's from Drew. Brian and Vinny, I decided to cash in my shout-out because I'm drinking and watching TNA. What better time? I first signed up in May after a month or two of freeloading. The shows with Dynamite Dave, Lance, The Brian and Vinny Show, and The Carl Stern Show have all made my commute bearable. Freeloaders, do not be fucking degenerates. Compensate the people that entertain and inform you. That being said, at times this year, the website alone has maintained my interest in wrestling. For that, I'm not sure whether to say thank you, Dave and Brian, or fuck you, Dave and Brian. I just renewed for a year anyway. My shout-outs are The Board. It catches a ration of shit, but it's not that bad a place. Yes, it has its share of shut-ins, trolls, and douche nozzles, but so do most places. Do douches have nozzles?
Yeah.
The 10-2 LSU, I've never used one, football team. Humble the Aggies and the Cotton Bowl. Brent Kremen, Mark from New Jersey. They both need regular guest spots. The King of Beer, Budweiser. The only King cooler than King Booker. Just like Mark Briscoe, it hurt my head when Steve Austin switched to light beer. And fuck yous to Vince Russo. And by the way, when I realized that Daniel San's last name was LaRusso...
Whew, you were ready to quit the movie, weren't you?
I almost shut that thing off. Vince McMahon... Wake up, you old, stubborn asshole. Jeff Jarrett, you are not a draw. You've been around for over 20 years and have done one entertaining thing. Beat up children. The Omega crew of jobbers. I can't wait until Jeff can no longer show his painted addict face on TV. Wow. That's from Government Cheese right there. An angry, angry young man. So there you go.
That's happens when you drink and watch Impact. You get angry.
That's right. Well, I get angry, and I drink. By the way, we're doing shout-outs here, so if you sign up today, $10.99 a month, full access to all of our shows. If you only get one show a week, you're missing out. We do 15 to 20 shows every single week. 15 to 20 a week! And we also have the entire archive available if you sign up. That means every show we've done since October of 2005. And if you divide or add or whatever...
Don't trust Brian's math, everyone.
15 to 20 shows a week times every week since October of 2005. That's a lot of shows in the archives right now. And they're all available, including interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino, Ric Flair, Bryan Danielson, Lance Storm is on every other week, including tomorrow. List goes on and on. It's a great website. Sign up and get your free shout-out. All right. Oh, that's from Grandma. Not actually a shout-out
right
there. Not
really a shout-out
then,
no.
No. All right. Brian, just cashing in my free shout-out after recently signing up. Was a freeloader for a couple of months, but thanks to the brilliance of the Brian and Vinny show, I've signed up. Great show. Keep up the good work, guys. I'd like to send a shout-out to the following people. My family, the whole Manchester United football team, the Wexford hurling team. It's an Irish sport, he says. Look it up. Sheamus, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Steve Austin, and The Rock. Anyway, that's my shout-out, Brian.
I think he just gave a shout-out to a whole bunch of people who are not listening.
Well, yeah. He's just saying that he likes them. You think Vince McMahon's fucking listening from the last guy's shout-out?
I guess not. Maybe it just suddenly occurred to me that's funny.
You think Vince Russo's listening for his fuck-off?
Perhaps.
Just like to send a shout-out to... he did. Anyway, that's my shout-out, Brian. Keep up the good work. And all the people who work on the F4W Online, Happy New Year. That is from Martin in Wexford, Ireland.
A lot of euros today.
Thank you, Martin. Really appreciate that.
Thank you, Martin, yes.
Yeah, if you're a euro listening to this, sign up, because we got a shitload of them on the board. Which brings us to our final shout-out today. This is from Hardcore Hogan, believe it or not. These are the brackets for the King of the Board tournament this year. Vinny, you're not in it.
I don't even get a chance to defend my crown.
No.
Bullshit.
You didn't even know what was going on.
No, I didn't.
I had to fight my damn way into this tournament this year. And then I was eliminated in the runoff.
You're not in it either.
In the RUNNOFT, I was eliminated. Largely because there were five people in the group, and also in my group was Jez, who fucked the whole thing up for me, I believe. But I did get the, I believe, third most votes of anybody in the entire tournament. So to me, I should at some point be put back in. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
On the plus side, we don't have to hear you do your speeches running for King of the Board anymore on the show.
Listen, I didn't do a single speech before my runoff. Not a single one. I didn't talk about it on the show.
That's been last year.
I didn't talk about it on Facebook. Nothing. I didn't do a thing. I calmly waited for my constituency to vote for me, which they did in mass numbers. And unfortunately, some fools on the board got together with their friends and posted on their Facebook and did their radio shows and managed to get me beaten by, I believe, 8 votes. So the whole thing was shady bullshit. But these are the official brackets, everybody. Bracket 1. Iamo, version 1, against Mr. BTY. Crumbly will be facing Tarmus. That's a big matchup. What's so funny?
I don't board as a verb. So I know Crumbly's the guy who used to defend TNA and finally gave up.
Well, I think he still defends him a bit. Aeroscorp is going to be facing Chibi. And the Pingu girl, who I hope wins King of the Board.
I know her. She must win.
Faces McNutma. She better win that one right there. I endorse the Pingu girl in the first bracket of King of the Board.
Lovely young lass. Always happy.
Bracket 2 has Alan Forel against Canada. That's a battle right there. The Hitman versus Zig, formerly the Supersonic. The Underbaker faces Vanilla Fire 1000. There's a battle for you right there. Hopefully a combined 0 votes for that one.
I was going to ask who you favored.
And the Bone Machine, who beat me in the qualifier due to shady underhanded tactics, will be facing Doc G. who in fact is a real doctor, everybody. Bracket three, Klitz will face, I don't even know how you pronounce this, Dieball? I never even tried to pronounce his
name.
Doesn't
matter, Klitz is going to win.
I just know it on the board. Klitz better win that one. R. Frederick will face Neville. Browser Brody will face the Limerick Lad in a battle of...
great names.
The man who created the first ever song on this show.
Yeah, that's true.
A grizzled, grizzled veteran, Bruiser Brody, who, by the way, did not vote for me, so I cannot endorse him. He'll be facing a 19-year-old youngster, the Limerick Lad. It's the veteran versus the rookie.
Right.
And Rican will face the Big Drink.
The Big Drink?
The Big Drink.
I don't think I've ever even heard of the Big Drink.
In bracket four, the first ever king of the board, Jimmy Lasers, will be facing King Enigma, who I believe I said with fans like him, TNA would never go out of business. That's all you need to know about that one. Nesbar against Rob the Nerd in a epic battle. Worship the Ram faces Fet Man. And finally, Doom Chicken will be facing Mike Coughlin.
Sorry, that's Doom Chicken versus Mike Coughlin.
Uh-huh.
If you announced that matchup to someone who had never heard of the site, who knew nothing about wrestling or MMA or combat, if you'd have said Doom Chicken is facing Mike Coughlin, they would giggle.
So the semis will be the winners of bracket one versus the winners of bracket two, and bracket three and bracket four squaring off. You can vote on the King of the Board tournament in the Major Psychological Issues Forum on the board, for those of you that want to get involved here. Everybody involved in this is going out of their way to try to get votes. We have wacky videos. We have great postings. I sliced and diced two guys in my bracket before finally going down in flames to the bone machine. So I was proud of my contributions. It's all up there right now, so everybody check it out. It's going to be going on for a couple of months now. And, yeah, even though I was, quite frankly, fucked in this tournament, hopefully I can find a way to ease my way back
in. At least you were in it.
Yeah.
I was apparently not even given a chance to defend my crown.
No.
They did not
acknowledge the tournament last year that you won, so therefore...
They were so concerned I would win again, they didn't even give me a chance.
That's what I thought. I had to fucking fight my way back in. A former king of the board should never have to fight his way back in. He should automatically be in the top 32.
Like the Masters.
That's my belief.
Yes.
Yeah. Until we have 32, at which point we can start getting rid of some of these guys that won that never did anything, like yourself.
Right.
All right. So, anyway, everybody, that's it for today. I guess we'll play one last song here, and then we'll wrap it up. What do we have that we haven't played here for a while? Let me go back into the song archives and pick one out here, and we'll wrap it up with this. Who always makes good songs?
Hoff Hoffy?
David Hoff Hoffy is a... I don't see... How about Sheamus teams up with Rihanna?
Umbrella fella.
Yeah.
He's heard it before, but all right.
Klitz.
I took out Triple H. But how about it? You and me. You think for 1 second this is over? You're wrong. You want to talk about pathetic, fella? See, I will be WWE champion again. Because I took out the son-in-law. You lost, fella. Fella. H. Fella. H. Fella. H. Fella.
Fine work there, Klitz, as always. Anybody, that's it for today, everybody. But because it's Wednesday night, we're back tomorrow.
Right.
Back tomorrow, everybody. And then on Friday, the very first late night edition of our version of Coast to Coast AM is going to debut. So I'm going to tell everybody about that tomorrow. So if you're a freeloader, you're not going to get all the details. So sign up today, and tomorrow I'll fill you in. It's going to be a good time. Cops in the woods. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Bye.